Hey, what's good? This is Rich.
And I'm Marcus.
And you're listening to Paychecks and Balances, where we help you make money, save money, and get out of debt. Ugh.
I like it. If you're new to the show and like what you hear today, or you've been around for a bit and haven't done so already, join our email list so you can receive our free Paychecks and Balances 15-minute money plan, as well as actionable work and money tips and interesting reads to help you get ahead financially and professionally. To get the goods, visit paychecksandbalances.com/email. Again, that's paychecksandbalances.com/email.
And heads up that we're going to be off for July. So while there won't be new episodes, we will be active in our private Facebook group. So to join, visit paybal.co/group. Again, paybal.co/group. We also want to let you know that PNB is coming to Philly. So I'll be there to speak at Podcast Movement. And just before the conference, I'll be hosting our first ever PNB meet and greet, which will be taking place on July 21st. So to get the full scoop, make sure you're in the private Facebook group and or on our email list. But yes, PNB is coming to Philly. So looking forward to catching up with the folks that will be able to come out and join the event.
I really want to like drop something Philadelphia related here, but I'm like, what do they go by? Is it like
Born and raised?
Is it P-Town? Yeah. Should I like, you know, jump into a little Fresh Prince of Bel-Air? But I was like, maybe that's corny. So instead,
a little bit of Meek Mill action.
Yeah. I'll ask you, should I regale the people with the slight story I shared with you about my adventures in New York City? Or should I hold that for foreshadowing and the comeback episode? I mean, I think I could summarize in about 5 minutes or so, but if you want to get to this very good episode. I was about to say another word that would result in a pause. So since I'm trying to be, you know, more progressive, I'm trying to stop saying pause. So what do you think? Should I hold that story or should I share it with the people?
Let's cover it on the next one.
Cool. It basically involves Uber. I'll just leave it with that. Just let your imagination roam. And it is probably exactly what happened. Yes, I had a near tragic event with Uber, a story of intrigue, and an espionage, and I will share it with you when we return in July.
Yeah, that's a pretty good cliffhanger, man.
Appreciate that. And on today's show, we're chatting with L. Martinez of Couple Money. If you're in a relationship or plan to at some point in the future, it's like, you know, one of those infomercials where they start speaking really fast. If you plan to be in a relationship, you're thinking about being in a relationship. If you know someone who is in a relationship or you've been around or would be in the 6 degrees of separation and someone near or dear to a relationship, this episode is for you. She tells her personal story that leads to a discussion that resonates with all of us, and we hope you enjoy. L. Martinez started Couple Money in 2009, but she's been writing about personal finances for more than 7 years. Besides writing on her own site, she's been a contributing writer at several, including TurboTax, GoBankingRate, and LendingTree. Simply put, Couple Money is about helping couples build their finances together by learning to live on one income and having fun with the second, by finding tips, tools, and services that can help couples work out solutions to address their needs. Couple Money has been mentioned or featured on other sites such as Business Insider, Daily Finance, TurboTax, and GBR. Shout out to them. And we're happy to have Elle on Paychecks and Balances today. Welcome to the show, Ms. Martinez.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So is there anything that we've missed from your illustrious background that you feel the listening audience should know about?
Well, I would just say I'm a lot like your audience. I've started from a place when we got married, from a place in debt, and I started Couple Money because we needed it. So it's through our personal experience and talking with other couples that kind of motivated me to share our journey out of debt, but then also share some other perspectives as well.
And I think that's a good start because I saw something recently, and actually you might have been commenting in this thread. I want to say it was Millennial Money Man, but I'll get the exact one as we move through the show. But he had a question on how do you continue to stay involved or connected to the people? Do you feel that as you grow in either your wealth or success that you become more disconnected? If not, how do you stay grounded and connected to the people who, in your case, may be reading or listening?
Well, it's funny you say that because one thing that is different now that I did in the past is I would have these monthly net worth updates. And when we started, of course, it was definitely in the negative. But slowly but surely, we had dug out of that. And we got to the point a few years ago where we had six figures of net worth. And when we hit that mark, I stopped doing that because I felt like the whole point of it was to encourage, to show like, hey, some months we move two steps ahead, some months we kind of fall back, but we keep chugging along till we get there. Nowadays, on my newsletter, I'll talk about what our monthly budget is. Mm. You know, how do we, okay, here's the budget we have. How do we spend? You know, how do we save? How do we share? Because I think that's the meat. That's really the most helpful. I feel like sometimes once you've reached a certain point, I have to say it is fun to kind of be a voyeur into somebody else's finances. But when you have someone who is six figures positive and you're just getting started, it can be discouraging. I know I felt that way. And so that's shifted. And then also I've always encouraged the community to email me what's going on because things have changed. You've probably seen it. Even the last few years, the landscape with fintech, a lot of things are booming. It seems they're shifting. And so I really do need to plug into the community to kind of connect with them. And I feel like for me personally, getting those emails is the best way.
And I appreciate that. And I wanted to share that and to confirm it was Millennial Money Man, who has a great blog as well. Folks want to check it out. He's at Gen Y Money Man on Twitter. And he asked the question, do you personal finance bloggers feel like we help enough everyday people or do we focus on high earners too much in general? And I've heard this a few times, both for people in and outside of the lane, is that the story is only relatable for a defined period of time. So I want to know, let folks know that that's something both that we struggle on the other side as well. And that's a place that we started at. But like you, my response was the struggle for me is you become less relatable the more successful you become. So finding that balance between still continuing to share the message with the people.
Yeah.
And reach the people that need to hear it.
Of course. Yeah. And like with the emails and chatting with them, I think it's also the nature of the topics we talk about in Couple Money. You're not going to throw your spouse under the bus, or thankfully most people haven't when they talk to me. You know, they're not going to tweet about it or, you know, share on Facebook like they totally screwed up, gotten us $10,000 of debt or whatever. But I do get these emails where people will share that. And I feel like that one-on-one communication is absolutely crucial, however you get it, depending on the topics that you cover. I think that makes all the difference. To be relatable is to acknowledge, like, I've been there. But then also, this was a deciding factor for me with the podcast, is I didn't just want to share our story for that reason. With couples, even though on paper we can say, oh, this couple got out of debt, this couple got out of debt. And the numbers can be the same, but how you get there in every relationship, every marriage is completely different because we all have different starting points. And so you have that added layer of individuality. And so that's how I feel like I still plug in, is I reach out to different couples or to other people that I've seen that are successful and ask them, how did you get there? What were those conversations?
So when people are getting started, what would be your number one piece of advice for couples?
So I'm going to start off with what I thought was the right thing to do. And then years later, what we've personally found out made all the difference. And I think this is going back to what's relatable, what works. My philosophy is don't necessarily have to be the technical, perfect financial decision. It has to be the right decision for your marriage. So when we first started, I would tell you, go for the numbers, sit down and talk about exactly where you guys are with your finances. You know, lay out all the numbers. Be financially naked, as sometimes people call it, and just let it all out. Now, I would say the first thing couples should do is to sit down, skip the numbers for the first time, and talk about where do you guys want to go as a couple? What do you want to do together? Either this year, by the end of the year, what do you want to knock out? In a few years down the line, what are your big dreams that you want to have happen? And the reason I say that is I think, and you guys were actually talking about this a few episodes ago about like budgets and this misconception about what it is that we approach budgets as a restriction. We look at finances as kind of a list of don'ts. So when you change that mindset and you say, okay, these are the things we're really passionate about. We don't necessarily want to make a ton of money. We want to make enough money so we can travel. Or you might have another couple that says, I want to start a business, maybe start a family, maybe both. However you decide, you guys should both be excited about that. Once you establish where you're going, then I say bring in the numbers, because then it's a matter of almost like planning like your epic dream vacation. You know where you're going. Now you have to say, okay, well, what do we have now? We have to get the plane tickets. We have to do the logistics. Where we're going to stay, is it Airbnb or hotel? All those little things come into play after you decided this is really what we want to do and we're excited about this. And it's less of a, you brought this much amount of debt versus, okay, here we are now. This is where we want to go. Let's come up with a plan, whether you call it a budget or not, and work towards that.
Now, how does this advice change for people that maybe aren't on the path to marriage yet? So they're earlier in their relationship, they're just getting to know somebody, or maybe they've been together for a few months. How does the advice change for somebody who's not quite super serious, but they may be going down that road and still want to make sure that they're on the same page as their partner?
Well, actually, this is a great opportunity when you are getting to know each other, talking about money. For lack of a better term, we worry about what people think. Do they think I'm greedy? Do they think I'm a gold digger? Why would I bring this up? Instead, talk about, well, what are you working towards now? You know, where do you see yourself in the next few years? And they might say, hey, I'm thinking of moving ahead in my career. I might be thinking of pivoting. This is something I really like. When you give the context of your dreams, then I would say after you've heard from them, open up about what you're doing and how you're working towards that, and include finances. It doesn't have to be a play-by-play, but just enough to make money more comfortable, more natural in your conversations, because that's a really good habit to have when you're dating. If you're still in the deciding phase, like, is this something that's going to move forward? It's better to know sooner rather than later.
I love that. Now, I was on some app at some point in time, and I had swiped right, and they had also swiped right, and we began a dialogue. And I said, so, like, what's up? What's your plan for the next couple of years? And so I know sometimes asking these where do you see yourself questions can sound real formal, but it's also very telling, because in this situation, the person was like, I don't know. I'm just trying to figure it out. Like, it's so cool that you have a 1-year plan. I quickly ghosted thereafter.
But isn't that something that you want to know ahead of time? And a lot of times when we're kind of curious about the finances of a potential partner or spouse, whoever, we're really just trying to see if we're on the same wavelength. And when you can see that maybe you're not, then you're getting to the root of it. Like, is this something we can work out together? Is this something maybe we need to bring a professional in if you're already married? That's one of those things that I think we kind of hope that it works out. I know a lot of our friends, when we were talking about this, they were afraid of bringing it up because they didn't want to start a fight. But you're really missing out on an opportunity to come up with a plan together and start building your life together.
And I'm going to go ahead and advocate for a show title, because this feels very financially intimate. And my question was going to be, so I think I read somewhere, and I'll probably pull this headline, I'm sure there's been plenty by this time, that like 50% of millennials would leave somebody with debt, or some made up thing that I'm sure they surveyed like 3 people and they're like 2 people said yes. But what does that look like to you? So I'm trying to figure out the nice way to say this, but do you need someone to like come, you know, show me the receipts? I want to see the credit report, log into your Credit Karma. I don't need to see the password. Or is it just, do you think encouraging, taking word for it in the beginning, innocent until proven financially guilty?
Well, okay. So if they're not married, they're not committed, because if you're married, you really do need to look at the numbers hardcore. When you're starting out, start off with just simple conversations with what are you planning. Maybe you open up. You don't have to pull up your credit score, but you're talking about, hey, down the line, I want to buy a house. I know I want to do that. Right now, my score is in the 700s and so forth, so I'm trying to work on this. And when you open up, it makes the other person feel safer. And you might discover that they don't even know what their credit score is. They haven't looked. And I think when you take the first step in a relationship, especially when you're still kind of in the dating, getting to know each other phase, it kind of gives a safe space. But you don't have to go into like one-on-one. Okay, let me see your credit score. Okay, I need your report. I need to, can I talk to your employer? You don't have to go interrogate them.
Run a background check.
References.
Yeah. Just, you know, what's your social security? I got to probably not looking into that. But you can just talk about that and your goals. And okay, what are you guys doing together? Are you guys planning a trip soon? See if you guys can budget for that. Something as simple as that, you know, or you want to buy something, friend's wedding or so forth. Sit down and talk about how you're going to afford that. Those little conversations sound kind of ridiculous and simplistic, but they're great door openers to deeper conversations. And they give you a peek as to what's going on with your partner, with your spouse, and where their head's at with finances.
So would you, or do you encourage one person to, so to speak, be in the driver's seat? And the reason I ask that is, we've talked a little bit before, that like there might be like personality types like introverts and extroverts, but spenders and savers. So let's say you have two spenders or two savers. Do you think one person should take the lead on the financial house involving the other? Or do you think both should be at the table? Because I ask that because that might be miserable for some people. But or do you think that's just a miserable exercise that they need to go through because of its importance?
So the answer is play to your strengths. And most couples, especially when they come to me, I would love for them to come to Couple Money when things are going well, but it's not working with them with finances. And part of the reason is they haven't found a system that works for them in their approach to money. And what I mean by that is, yes, typically one person kind of is the go-to person, the numbers person, not necessarily who you think it is. If you look at my husband and I, technically you could say I'm the spender and he's the saver, but I do the budget. And the budget is something we sat down and we talked about, like, okay, I really would love to save because we paid off the student loans. Everything's, you know, knocked out here except for the mortgage. I really want to travel more. And he's like, I would love to finish the basement. He wants his like man cave section, game room. Like,
I understand.
You know, that's important. And so we both have a say with the plan. Like, absolutely. And I'm a big advocate for money dates. I guess we can talk to that later. But you both have to have skin in the game, a say in it. And the reason is when you have someone that takes the lead, very often, if there's no kind of way to check in, the dynamics change in your relationship. And I've heard from couples where the person taking the lead sometime comes across as the boss, or it almost becomes like a parent-child relationship. Like the person that doesn't have a say, maybe because they're just not into looking at it from a spreadsheet perspective, they feel like, wait, I have to ask for my money, or I only have an allowance. Even though like months ago they agreed like, hey, this is what we should have. Not having those check-ins definitely changes dynamics, makes it unbalanced. And sometimes the person taking the lead starts resenting the person that's kind of laid back.
Now, I'm glad you brought that up because I'm thinking about some of the comments that I've seen for people who listen to the show and they're like, oh, I finally got my girlfriend, brother, wife, husband, boyfriend, bae, boo, whatever you want to call it, to listen to the show and start thinking about money. So what would your advice be to someone who's dating somebody who's not great with money and they see that that person isn't doing very well, but they don't want to kind of encroach and create that argument? How would you advise someone go about getting their partner to start caring about this stuff without feeling like they're all up in their space, even though they literally may be?
Well, I think starting with those mutual goals that you have, say, hey, what do you want to do by the end of this year? You guys want to take a trip, maybe out of country, maybe out of state, you know, cross country, whatever. That one goal that you have, work together to come up with a plan. Because what you're doing is you're trying to build a habit in your relationship where you guys are comfortable and open about talking about money and you don't feel like you're being judged. And so you start with one goal. And I know a lot of couples come to me because I'm specialized with those already married and they want to jump into the let's save for retirement and my spouse isn't on board. that is not the goal you guys should have. You should first focus on something that you both agree on, that you both want to happen, and begin building that muscle of let's talk about money and let's come up with a system that reflects our different styles. And you're going to find a lot of times that even the person that is so-called financially savvy can learn something from the other spouse. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes that saver is great at saving, but they're not getting the point of money, which is, yes, you're supposed to save for the future, but enjoy the life that you're having now. And so that natural tension and relationship that you see, because not all the time, but typically opposites attract, that's something that can make you guys win together. It doesn't necessarily have to be you guys are confronting each other, but what can I learn from my spouse? Where can I kind of let go the reins in the budget? Because that's also another contention where, yeah, they have a technically, if we were perfect, we could save for retirement and retire in 3 years, but we are only going to have rice and beans. We can't go out. We'll never have friends again. Don't you dare go drink. You can't live like that. And I know that sounds extreme, but that is part of the process in a relationship is what are your strengths here? And what are your strengths in this? And let each other take the lead. I think, what's the saying? Like, we go 50-50 on this. Realistically, in a relationship, that's not what happens. I might, like, for example, pull the weight with the spreadsheets. 90% is me. I get excited, you know, knocking that out because I'm like, oh my goodness, I can shave off like 2 more months or whatever. My husband takes the bigger projects, some of our purchases, like finishing up this basement. That has to get done piece by piece. He's a software developer. I let him go to town with that, you know, like coming up with the contractors and the numbers. So are we necessarily doing 50-50? No, I'm doing mainly the spreadsheets here. He's handling the contracting and figuring out how that's going to work here. But we're working as a team rather than, okay, you do this equally, I'll do this.
Got it.
So I found it. It was 1 in 5 millennials. Now, mind you, this is Yahoo Finance. Don't angry email me, millennials. consider debt a deal breaker. So that I'll get that in the show notes so y'all can argue about it in the comments. You kind of highlighted there building your marriage through wealth and money date. So what is a money date and how can that help build a marriage up?
Okay. So
or even a non-marriage if you're just dating somebody.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Money dates are great because it's a relaxed and regular check-in that you guys have with each other. And kind of like I mentioned with my advice changing is your first, quote, money date is talking about what do you guys want to do together? What is the big goal that you're working towards? And then coming up with a plan. And in my book, when I was researching for Jumpstart Your Marriage and Your Money, I was talking with couples who have done it. You know, we've paid off our debt. We're working towards financial independence. But I've talked to, you might know Justin from Rutagood. He retired in his 30s, him and his wife, and they have 3 young kids in tow.
Hatred in my heart.
Yeah. So the excuse like kids will slow you down. That's not necessarily true. I've talked with couples who've paid off $100,000 of debt, not counting the mortgage. And that was a big factor was they found a way to regularly check in and talk about, okay, where are we going? And then making sure their money goes in that direction. And the funny thing is they call it different things. Someone called it a budget party. I've heard spending plans, however you want to do it. I call them money dates because they should be something you could do as a regular date. Go out. You know, we have 2 little kids. So sometimes we go out, sometimes we wait till they're asleep. We go in the backyard, get the fire pit. You know, he has a scotch. I have my wine and we sit and we talk about what we're doing, you know, however it looks to you. And those conversations sound like, oh my goodness, this is going to take forever. I want to say the first 2, you know, you're kind of getting into the swing of things, but eventually we're at a point where the money part of it takes like 15 minutes a month. So because once you kind of get into a flow, it almost becomes second nature. It's just spot checking. For example, when we were talking about this month's budget, 80% of the budget's the same, except for we have a trip. We're going to Denver for my cousin's wedding. So now we knew beginning of the month, let's hold back on some spending because we want to use it in Denver. We want to go and do some brewpub tours. And so those are the conversations we're having. No, we do not bring out a spreadsheet. We review it on our phones, you know, before we do the date, but it's not like, okay, honey, did you check line five? Did you see that it allocated for you $10 for your beer this week? You don't do that.
Now, I've heard that there are apps out there that are specifically geared toward couples. And actually, it's not that I just heard. I also saw, but I can't remember the name. So do y'all have an app that you share access to, or do you have recommendations for apps that you think are great for couples?
So I think what you're talking about, I had met the team at the conference at FinCon, Honeyfi. They specialize with couples. And I think that's a great idea, where you have an app, and then within the app, you can kind of check in with each other. Say if you go to the store and you're buying something, you can take a picture of that through the Honeyfi app. Say, hey, we have that extra $200 in our budget that we haven't spent yet. I saw this deal. We've been talking about it. Let's go for it. And then they can yay or nay it. I think that's handy. We use Google Sheets, which doesn't sound sexy. I have a personal capital account that kind of gives us for the quarterly check-ins with all the investments and the portfolios and all that stuff. But something as simple as a Google Sheet is easy. Tiller is something that I'm trying out now, which connects with that. And it takes the boring part, which is getting those transactions from your bank, and pulls it for you. And I like that because that is completely customizable. And I think a lot of couples, especially now, with many millennials juggling maybe a traditional or maybe a non-traditional job, that gives their budget a little bit of flexibility, and they can really tweak it to what their circumstances are.
Got it. Yeah. I think it was Honeyfi that I saw as well at the conference. I'm like, I know there's something. I've seen it in the last 365 days. So on a related but unrelated note, how do you feel about couples that aren't engaged in and aren't headed to marriage opening a bank account together? Good idea, bad idea?
I would hold off on that. Because I've talked with professionals, financial planners. I've talked to real estate agents where a couple that isn't married, or maybe they're engaged, they break up and they already bought this house, and it's just mess. It's really hard to untangle. With that, I think what they should do, though, is plan together. And I get a lot of this with couples who are remarrying in this scenario, where they've been burned the first time, or they have kids and there's special circumstances with their accounts, and they feel like, okay, I don't want to share everything in terms of putting that in their names, and they got to work out this transition. And so the first step I suggest for them in their situation is, even if certain accounts are separate temporarily or however you guys decide to do it, you should always be planning your money together. So spreadsheet wise, you can see what's in the accounts, where you're working towards. That is a good first step. We did, when we were engaged, a savings account for the wedding joint. And that was a good practice run for us. But otherwise, we kept our money separate.
Mm. Is there a book or blog that helped you get started in the beginning that you would recommend?
Yeah, there were a lot of really good books out there. And that's also another reason I started Couple Money, because I did find some great sites at that time. Get Rich Slowly, I Will Teach You to Be Rich. I love the site and I enjoyed the book. I felt like those were really good sources for general information, but I couldn't find anything at that time that discussed the whole, how do you relate to each other when you're coming from different perspectives, different backgrounds, and handling finances. But if someone's getting started, I definitely would recommend Remit. It's very easy, very unintimidating, but packed full of information. I know the name sounds ridiculous, I Will Teach You to Be Rich, but it really is a great general blueprint to get you started automating your finances. And then a classic is The Total Money Makeover. And I like that because it kind of laid out step by step, this is the process that you want to go through. And that's kind of the inspiration when I wrote my book, is I didn't want to give everything all at once, like a fire hose for a couple. I wanted to kind of lay out, like, in a month, you guys are combining your finances and figuring out a system. What are the essential steps? You know, so I give a 4-week guide, and that was really based on what I liked about the Total Money Makeover.
And I appreciate you saying that. I'm going to drop a few plugs here, so I'll get them in the show notes as well. But I've got a review of I Will Teach You to Be Rich, which actually I did enjoy. I thought the title was, it aligned with actually what he said, versus some titles, they're like, I'll teach you to be rich, and you read the book and learn nothing. This is actually
I think that's most titles, actually.
Yeah, this is the exact reverse opposite of it. And the Total Money Makeover, Dave Ramsey was the first book I read. I'm still thinking Dave is going to offer me the fade. Like one of these days, I'm like ducking around corners. You know, I'm convinced he's going to offer me the hands because it was the first book I read. And so I probably was the most critical of it. But now as I work my way through, I actually still have some other books that I'd recommend ahead of it. But I get the avenue that he was going for. I still think it's more of a old school approach as far as tone, but the concepts are sound. So to your point that you made a few times is I think the plan is more important. And then we've actually had J.D. Roth on the show on a few episodes, PB 34 and 87. I'll get both on the show. And he's the voice behind, although I think there's several voices now, Get Rich Slowly. So kind of had to walk through those plugs there, and I'll get all those in the show notes for the people. You seem to talk a lot about measuring net worth. So why is that important? So like, why should someone measure net worth, and how and where should couples get started?
So finances, a lot of it, if you look at it, it's kind of analogous to checking up our health. Like when you go to the doctors and you're checking something, they're going to go and run through your stats, your blood pressure, your weight, your height, all that. With your finances, the two biggest ones, of course, is your monthly budget, but then your net worth is a snapshot. It lets you know big picture view of how you're doing with your finances. And I think a lot of us avoid it because when we first get started, it's not great. Mm. I know when we first had the conversation about our finance, and we thought we were smart, like we were engaged, we talked to our friends that were happily married for years. They told us, listen, talk about finances. You think it's not important. It's not a materialistic thing. If you don't talk about this and understand where you guys are heading, it's going to be an added strain. So we did, and I have to be honest, I did not know my exact net worth when we first started talking about our money. I gave them ballpark figures. I mean, thankfully, they weren't completely off. That'd be horrible if I'm like, hey, baby, yeah, only $10,000 in debt. Oh, surprise, it's 90. Missed a few numbers. But I really couldn't because I was afraid of acknowledging how much debt I was. That was kind of a coping mechanism where, yeah, I knew my student loans were around $20,000. I knew I had some, you know, credit card debt, but I never sat down and looked at the number. And just like if you're trying to get in shape, you got to get those measurements. That way you can see what progress you're making. Net worth, even though you might not want to rip off the Band-Aid, I found it once we took that and put it out on a spreadsheet, it kind of took the sting away. There's no subjective like, oh, we're doing bad or good. It was, you know what? We just saved $300. Our net worth just went up, or we just knocked down this debt. This is going to help us going forward. When we paid off the last of the student loan, it was fantastic because we knew like automatically our net worth update for the next month was going to look fantastic. It was going to be awesome. And so I think the fear initially, of course, is acknowledging, oh my gosh, how bad is the mess? But going forward, you almost look forward to doing those check-ins because you know, hey, you know what? I've worked really hard towards this. You've worked really hard. Let's see the progress we've made. And if you have a hiccup, you now know how big it is.
You know, net worth is something that I've started paying a lot more attention to recently. And a lot of that is for some of the same reasons that you've said. And I almost kind of challenge myself on a regular basis at this point. I do have a net worth goal I want to get to by the time, I was going to say 36, but let's just say 37. So I give myself some extra time. And also just saying 37 just made me realize how washed I really am. One thing that I find particularly helpful about it is that it does give you like the most realistic picture and snapshot of where things are versus my attitude used to be all about the credit score, like get my credit score up, get my credit score up, get my credit score up. Whereas with net worth, as you do things, you see that number changing in real time. And it's actually impacted the way that I've gone about making some decisions on how I spend money. You know, where from like, all right, if I take this out of stock from work or out of savings, mm-hmm. or if I just continue to let this credit card bill stay there, knowing that I could pay it off, even though it'll hurt in the short term, ultimately that's going to give me more money in the future since I won't be eating that interest. So I always really encourage people to look at that number. I do remember when I first set it up in Mint, I would go in and scroll right past all that red because it was a negative number. But then I got to that point where I was like, you know what? I really need to start paying attention to this. And since then, like, it's been a steady progression upward because it's something that I always keep front and center. And it's something that I make a point to look at least once a week.
Yeah. And for us, once you have it set up, and it goes back to, again, if this is a new habit, it's going to take time. It changes how long people develop habits. I've heard like 3 weeks, sometimes longer. But until you get that muscle flexed, it's going to take a little bit work. But your net worth eventually, especially if you set it up with an app, is like a 2-minute thing to look at. And then you can always deep dive like, hey, wait a minute, we've lost some money with our net worth. What happened? Then you look at it. Oh, it's just our investments. That's the stock market. So that's a short-term thing. Long-term, we're doing okay. That gives you a perspective. And it's just so much easier to talk about finances when you kind of have a big picture goal versus now sometimes when you're in the middle of the trenches, you feel like, oh my goodness, all this money is going towards paying the debt, how we're doing. But when you see your net worth go up, that can be enough of a motivation to keep going.
And I also want to quickly define for the people, so I'll get this in the show notes, and this is from Investopedia. So if you're wondering, net worth is the amount by which assets exceed liabilities. Another way to say this is the value of everything you own minus all your debts. So for folks who either want to quickly do that at home, and then y'all both mentioned them, but I'll summarize with I use Mint. I've heard great things about Personal Capital as well. I will say in full transparency, I tried Personal Capital, and honestly, it was just we had a difference of opinion in that it couldn't connect to two accounts. I tried twice and I gave up. So, you know, that goes either to my own personality or whatever the case may be. But I had one app that was working for me and one that was not. But I will say holistically, Personal Capital serves both a different audience and a different purpose. So for anyone who does want to truly measure their net worth and get the long-term picture, I would actually recommend Personal Capital. But Mint does have a net worth calculator in there, and I use it more for a budgeting purpose. So I would actually say that if you can get both to work, they serve different purposes. Unless you feel differently, do you use Personal Capital holistically for both budgeting and investing, or do you have something different that you use for the budget piece?
So the budget is more with Google Sheets, and okay. The net worth is Personal Capital. But I agree with you. And that's something I've gotten from readers when we join and we talk about budgets. I'll mention usually three. I've mentioned Mint, Personal Capital, Tiller, because I feel like those are really powerful tools. And then HoneyFi keeps adding some new features that I think are great for couples that are nervous about talking. And so it's sometimes easier to do the app. But that's my whole thing of find a system that works for you. There's going to be principles that apply no matter what you use, but the actual tool, I'm not really hung up with, and I like how you pointed out, like, it didn't fit you. It didn't work for your system. Great. You know, don't try to force, you know, a round peg into a square hole. Find something that naturally fits you and then boom, move forward.
Yeah, they literally sent me an email. They're like, hey, sir, I think you can correct this error. And I was like, me? Correct? Nah, I'm good. And then I canceled my account. I'm like, that's on y'all to fix. At least that's what I said in my head. So I actually found one of your books, but it sounds like you've written two or more. So the one
just one. One book. I have guides, digital guides.
So can you walk through those and kind of what you see as the purpose of each?
Sure. So I created earlier... two big goals that couples have when they approach was getting out of debt, but they couldn't agree on the how. So I got the Dump Debt Together guide. And that takes you through, one, the process of getting out of debt, and then two, deciding as a couple what's going to be the best method. And there's so many different systems. Of course, the two biggest ones, debt snowball, where you're attacking the debts one by one based on their balance, or the debt avalanche where you're attacking based on the interest rates, you know, can really divide people with couples. They don't know which one's going to be best. And I take them step by step. What are the questions? Let's look at your history, and you're more than likely going to be succeeding with A or B. And because I think it's more helpful not to tell someone what to do, but to show them the process to get through it. That way they can always tweak and adjust it as they need. And that was kind of my hang up with the Total Money Makeover, is that those are good guidelines, but then there's so much in between that you can work out. And I felt like certain things, he just was hardcore, nothing else. This is the system I do, take it or leave it. Mm-hmm. And then the other one was emergency funds, working that together. How do you save that money? Because it can really throw off a budget. And a lot of couples are running really tight, especially when they're starting off, that they don't even have any wiggle room for a bump in emergency. And they always happen. It happened to us last week. I was rushing to get the girls to school. I turned on the car and it did not start. We had no problems with the car. Needed new battery. And I was going to save anyway to get like the AC replaced, because this is the South and that is a necessity. And so it was like $200. We didn't necessarily plan to spend that week, but we have a system of savings in place where we were covered. It wasn't us going, oh my goodness, we're totally screwed for this month. Were we going to, what bill are we not going to pay, or kind of delay and call and see like, can you extend it 2 weeks? No, we had the savings already. We just made the transfer, made the payment, and went ahead and moved on. And so those were the two first guides that I did. And then Jumpstart Your Marriage and Your Money takes that. But it looks holistically, like, how do you guys even get on the same page with finances? And it takes you step by step. In 4 weeks, how do you come up with what goals you want to save up for, work towards? How do you create an automated system where about 90% of your money is taken care of for you? And then how do you run through these money dates? I mean, I even include conversation starters, icebreakers. I wanted to take like as much stress away for a couple that is busy to get the process started, all the barriers. And then the last 2 weeks of the plan is honing and refining it. And I share what's worked with couples who have been in those situations, like I mentioned before, some couples who paid off $100,000 debt or retired early, or those that have bought a house and paid off their mortgage faster. What were the things that worked for them? And then it's kind of like choose your own adventure in the last week. Now that you have the essentials, now that you have your system, where do you want to go from here? It looks thin, but it's a lot of information, and I wanted it to be an easy read for both spouses.
And is there an easy place for people to grab that? Or so I'm guessing if they just go to your website, you probably have an item in the navigation bar or a button for them to click and get to these various guides in your book as well.
Yeah. And if you want a direct link, I put like couplemoney.com/book. That goes straight to Amazon for the Jumpstart Your Marriage and Your Money book. It's, like I said, it's a small guide, but it's really accessible. And that was one of the things when the publisher approached me, was coming up with something that would offer value for busy couples. Because I think that is another barrier for couples, is we are not coming on from the same perspective, the same angle. And at the same time, we got jobs, you might already have kids, you might have a few things that you're working towards, projects, you're being pulled in so many different directions. What are the essentials and how do I set that up so we can automatically start winning?
And I want to reinforce, I will teach you to be rich. And I think that's what kind of separated, and you mentioned this as well, from mm-hmm. Total Money Makeover. And then I'm going to also plug The Automatic Millionaire, because I read that on a flight, a 2-hour flight, mm-hmm. just to give folks some context. But what I thought those two did very well was actionable tips. Yeah. Whereas I thought The Total Money Makeover was like, here's this conceptual. And now, mind you, I'm an auditor day by day, so I like specific directions, like 1, 2, 3, compliance, ABC. And so I like to operate the black and white. And I felt like both of those books took the next step of like, here's the problem and here's the exact website you go to. Here's the exact information you should enter when you get there. And here's the exact number you need to allocate if you want to get to this amount of money. And I just felt that that closed the bridge for me that was kind of still open on the Total Money Makeover. Now, to be fair, I know that Dave Ramsey has a whole library now, and there's like the Money University and things like that, which he's probably expanded on this. But I felt that these two quick reads addressed all of those within one book, and it sounds like yours is doing the same. You also opened up an opportunity for a painful story that I'll share with the people, you know, and I call it and keeping me humble, which as Rich knows is something I need a reminder of roughly every 89 to 93 days. So this week in keeping me humble, things were going extremely well.
That should I was be about a segment, to go. Bro.
Yeah, exactly. It might need to be because it happens every 90 days. So things are going really well. I was literally going to later that day to fly out to an interview for this one was Yahoo Finance. I mean, like things are hitting. Rich is telling me the podcast is doing better than ever. The numbers are great. And I drove to work and actually, it was when Rich was out here. So, Rich, I don't know if you even noticed this. So, the light on my car came on. We were coming home from the pool. We had a long day. And I was like, you know what? I'll do it tomorrow. Like, I was just lazy. Like, there was no other excuse. I woke up in the morning and I was like, you know what? I'll do it on lunch. So I drove to work. And now, mind you, my car is a gas guzzler. So, that's important to the context of this story. And then lunch comes around. I'm like, driving. In 35 years, I've been able to make this statement until now. I ran out of gas. My car was like, nope. Mm. Like, yo, I warned you, brother. You out here playing games. And I didn't even know what's going on. It was just like, it just died. You know, I never ran out of gas. So I don't know what the experience is like. I'm like, what the? I was like, what? I didn't even know what a car out of gas would sound like. So I'm out here walking around in this 94 degree Texas humidity.
Ooh.
Yes. Yeah, man. It was painful. So luckily, I was like right up the street from a gas station. And I told myself, I was laughing. I was actually telling my girlfriend about this. I could have called somebody. I'm literally like right up the street from work, but I'm like, you know what? This is to keep me humble. This is like, you know, my head was blowing up. So I'm going to walk in this heat to remind me that I'm still starting from the bottom. You know, hey, Kelly, I want to remember where I came from. So I wanted to share that story with the people. And the quote that I heard was savings turn an emergency into an inconvenience. So I was just gravely inconvenienced. Had to take a shower on my lunch break because we're walking in this 94 degree heat.
I got my little talk about that, man.
Yeah, I got my 1 gallon gas tank now, so that'll never happen again. That's in the back of my trunk. And so I want to share that story. You can't prepare for those emergencies, but you can have that emergency fund. So it's just an inconvenience when it does happen.
So did you put the gas in a Coca-Cola 2 liter bottle? Like how'd you transport it back?
Actually, funny story. When I got up there, that's what I thought I was going to have to do. When I got up there, they sold like 1 gallon gas tanks. So apparently, I'm not the first one where this experience has happened to. And apparently, I had the look of somebody who had just ran out of gas because the guy at the counter was like, oh, is that your car down there? I was like, yeah, man. I got 1 gallon. And you can't even get 1 gallon. So I got like 9.8 gallons of gas because I can't overflow the thing. And I walked back and I filled my car up. This is like an hour long experience, man. It's pretty painful.
That's what you get, bro. That's what you get, man. So one other topic that we wanted to get to before we wrap it up. And Elle, I know we had a good conversation at FinCon about money and relationships, but not necessarily just between the two people who are in the relationship, but also the effect of family members as well. So I was wondering if you had any examples of a situation, whether it was you or a client or someone that you were working with where they had family members. So let's say person A, dating person B. Person B has family members who are consistently asking them for money. Person B is continuing to give those family members money at the detriment of the relationship between person A and person B. How do they navigate through that? And is that something that you've experienced or something that you've seen someone else experience?
So I've definitely experienced this personally in our relationship. I had a relative and I wrote a little bit about it where it seems like they would constantly have emergencies. And this is someone I was close to. And this was tough. And one of the biggest challenges in our marriage, because part of it was how close we are as a relative, but then also the culture. So my family's background is Puerto Rican. My husband's white, and the way we even approach money with our finances and our families, just, it's different. And it's taken some time to kind of find a rhythm. And I'm thinking of two examples. The first one I'll give, where this is actually a benefit when you have a different perspective, when you have someone that isn't, for lack of a better word, as invested in the relationship as you are with that person. They're invested in relationship with you, your spouse. Your spouse is looking at it. Is this hurting us? Is this hurting you? I had to be told, because he's quiet. My husband's a very quiet guy, but he kind of took me aside after this last emergency we had. And this was a few years back. And he's like, have you noticed that you kind of get these phone calls where the money situation is so desperate and no one else can help? And I'm like, well, you know, this relative's had a rough time. They got this going on, but it's the same issue. And he kind of sat down just calmly. He wasn't like, oh, stop giving the money. He was saying, let's look at this pattern here. And not to throw anyone under the bus, but kind of that situation you had with the gas tank where the relative wasn't like completely unaware that this was never going to happen. They just weren't taking the steps with affording school, with, you know, rent and some other things that were happening at that time. And it was really lack of a budget. Like, this relative just didn't think they needed a budget. Mm. And then emergency had to be put out, and it had to be now, because we all know, like, bills, when they're due, they're due. Your landlord or, you know, your school, whatever, they're not going to let you slide it for another 2 weeks or so.
Rent always sneaks up on people, even though it's the same date every month. Rent snuck up on me. I need help.
The first again.
Yeah. And when did that happen? So that is something in marriages that I wasn't seeing covered at the time. So we went through that, and I even shared, how do you help a relative without giving them money? How do you talk about this? And so with my husband and I, we have some rules. Should a relative on either side need any help, we actually have a little bit of our savings allocated for Help Family Fund. And we don't loan money to family now. If someone needs it, we will say, okay, like, say if they ask for $500 in theory, we can't loan you that money. We can give you $100, and it's a gift. Mm. And that is that. And that has really helped me. And I'm going to say I'm the bad person about this. For people that I'm very close to, you can call me 2 a.m, and if you have an emergency, I'm going to help you. This was a nice way to have a limit. And then also having his objective perspective allowed me to see that, like, that's not really helping him too. So now having this gift that we give that won't ruin our budgets already set aside, it helps us also with the relative, because then we don't have that tension. Like, are they going to pay back? Because we've had situations where, yes, relative has had an emergency and they've paid it back. Even though we said it's a gift, they paid it back. And it was once in like 5 years that's happened. And then we also have relatives where it seems like they always have an emergency. And after the second point, when you're like, this is what I can give and that's all I can afford, suddenly they disappear because they realize you're not this, their safety net. Like, I was technically that person's emergency fund because they knew I was more responsible. I mean, it hurts. And it did take some time, but by setting that limit, that's been incredibly helpful for both, not only our finances, of course, but also our relationship. And now we have boundaries and we understand, like, this is a boundary for us. And every couple is going to come up with different. Then the other side of it, I guess a more positive note, but something that I've seen come up with couples is, like, what are we going to do when our parents retire? And so, again, with the Hispanic culture, I'm expecting to help my mom out, to take care of her. You know, she was a single parent taking care of us. I don't want to put her in a home. Well, how are you going to set this up finances? And we talk about that. So we have a system where we're like, okay, you know, pray. That's way in the future. You know, my mom's young. Hey, mom. that, you know, that's part of the reason we're converting the basement is that's going to be a place for her down the line, you know, 15, 20 years, whatever, instead of putting her in her home, because that's for me what I need to do. And we've already talked about this. I haven't kind of gone around my husband and he hasn't, you know, tried sneaking money with his family. We come from it different perspectives, but what's our game plan together? And then put that in the budget.
I haven't even, so of the list of all the things that I would talk to a significant other about as it relates to money, that is something that like never comes to mind. So I'm glad you mentioned that, because I'm assuming there's a lot of other people out there who are operating the same way.
Well, unfortunately, sometimes it's like when that comes up with your parents, like they are sick now or they're retired now, and you spring that on your spouse. I mean, that's an immediate source of tension. Like, wait a minute. You know, for my husband, his family's different with how they approach money. They've been, you know, his parents have saved. They have this game plan here. You kind of naturally assume like the game plan my family has is going to be the same that your family has. No, like talk about it. Even if it's casual, like, well, what are we going to do when our parents are older? And just kind of open it there. Don't make a decision. Kind of see where you're coming from. And usually when you don't have that pressure of time, like make a decision now, it's a lot easier to find a compromise that makes both of you happy.
I agree. We're going to talk about that a little bit more. We're going to talk offline about that, but that's definitely a topic that we want to explore for the people. And I think it's something that people can relate to now, and then other people are going to be relate to in the future.
Yeah. And one other thing I would throw in is I know a lot of people who, part of the reason that they struggle financially is because of sick family members, or they're sending money back home. And these are people who are super responsible, but they just have this additional, I don't want to call it a tax, because I mean, that sounds bad, but in some ways that's what it can be, a tax financially and also a tax on your relationship. So I definitely want to talk about that again in the future.
Yeah. I mean, it affects a lot of us, and many times we don't realize like where we're kind of getting our mental scripts with money and certain assumptions we make unless we are open about it. And it can be surprising. Like I mean, I was born and raised in the United States. You know, my grandmother's from Puerto Rico and so forth. And so I'm Americanized in a lot of ways, but still that's a part of my culture, taking care of family. My grandmother stayed with us when she got sick. That's just expected. And I wouldn't say like it's a burden. It's kind of like this cultural expectation that we think is like normal because that's what we grew up with. And so within a marriage, you have to have these regular check-ins. And that's where a money date is really helpful, because you already have something set aside where this is what we talk about. Anything that can kind of affect our finances, our goals, we'll talk during our money date. And it's so much easier when you do it like a monthly basis at least. So if, you know, say if you screw up or say something comes up, you catch it during that month versus like you don't say anything for months or years and it just snowballs out of control.
Baby, we got to talk about your mama.
No, and it is like those conversations about money usually lead to other things. My husband is fine with my mom living with us because with her, she has really good boundaries. And you see, that's something you have to talk about in a marriage where, let's be honest, like, is this a relative that you could down the line live with? Is this something where you don't feel comfortable? You know, another option we were talking about is what are senior living facilities nearby that would be like 5 minutes away? Things like that, like put that on the table and, you know, be honest with each other. Like, I cannot live with your mother or your father or whatever. Because they have boundary issues. It's better to be upfront when that is not an immediate need and come up with something versus, you know, unfortunately, I do get emails from couples where my mom got sick or my dad got sick, single parent, you know, I'm kind of their help, their safety net. How can we come up with something? And I tell them, don't rush into a decision. This is something that you have to carefully, not only for your finances work out, but also for your marriage.
So I think this is great, but I could see that we would have another hour, which we, by the way, are, which I'm going to talk to you about as soon as we hop off of this show. But for folks that you would like to continue this conversation or find you around the interwebs, where can they look for you?
Sure. You can find me at couplemoney.com. I'm on social media, all at Couple Money. I try to keep things simple. And if you're a couple that are just busy, but you need to kind of have some wiggle room in your budget. I did create a free course. It's called 5 Days to 5K, How to Find, Save, and Earn Some Extra Money to Reach Your Goals Faster. And that's at couplemoney.com/5K.
Asterisk, scribbles and notebook, asterisk.
I'm glad you jumped in because I was literally scribbling in a notebook over here. So thank you for coming on the show, Elle.
Thank you. I had a lot of fun.
I'll pull up to the club, gas tank on E, all drinks on me. Oh, wipe me down. Yeah, I think that was...
I was wondering where that was going, man.
I was actually struggling to memorize the lyrics while I was going through. I was like, all right, don't mess this up. And I think I got it somewhere close. I think y'all know that national anthem. So, you know, wipe me down. I'm sitting out there on gas tank on E. But you know what? The drink's still on me. And also, if you want to find me around the interwebs with the gas tank on full, you can see me at CBSN Eye on Your Money. In case you missed it, I'll get it in the show notes. And I also joined a Yahoo Finance panel. Shout out to Jeannie Ahn, and I'll get that in the show notes as well. A guest that we had on the show before where we talked about negotiating your salary. She extended an invitation, and I joined an extremely well-placed and knowledgeable panel of experts to discuss how to rebuild your credit.
A topic that I believe you have some familiarity with, brother.
I'm loosely familiar.
Yeah, this was a good one, man. And especially when we got toward the end there and we started talking about the cost of taking care of family or your parents. So after we finished the recording, we did talk about having Elle back on in the future. So stay tuned for that. Definitely a topic that I haven't really seen covered elsewhere.
Yeah, definitely. We've got a few things in the queue for you for this, wrapping up these next two quarters. Like we said, six up, not six down.
And so if you enjoyed today's episode or found it useful, be sure to share with your network and hit us with those 5 stars in Apple Podcasts or your favorite listening app, if that's an option. Today's review comes from S_Cooper. Subject, well-rounded, funny, real, and relatable. 5 stars. These guys nail it on all fronts. This podcast is one of my favorites. Perfect for millennials. These guys are in the real life situations they talk about. The subjects they cover are current and based on actionable plans. They give more than one way to achieve goals and get on the right path without patronizing listeners. Yeah, we hate that. The guests they choose are well thought and add a lot to the podcast. On top of all this, they are great role models for people of color and others who are looking to hear diverse perspectives. So S_Cooper, really appreciate that 5-star review. And yeah, man, I think we do try to keep it pretty diverse in terms of the range of guests that we have on the show. I think we've had someone from pretty much every background at this point.
Yeah, I think we got a compliment on that on the social media streets when somebody was asking for a diverse podcast that they could listen to. And I shouted out the Paychecks and Balances and they recognized the guest that we also had on the show. So shout out to S. Cooper and shout out to that individual who's hopefully listening because I don't remember you at. But I think we had a good exchange, I guess is the word I'm going to say, on the social medias.
Indeed.
And if you'd like to follow us on those social medias, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at PayBalances and on Facebook at Paychecks and Balances. Follow our individual accounts. I'm available at the Marcus Garrett with 1 T on Twitter, and Rich is available at I Am Rich Jones.
I am.
And don't forget to grab that free 15-minute money plan. 15 minutes can change the next 15 years by visiting paychecksandbalances.com/email.
And so thanks to everyone for listening. Until next time, be safe. We out. If you're in Philly, better see you there. Peace.